Hey scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.
Moncrief on News Talk
with the Dacia Duster. Shockingly affordable, and now with 3 months deferred payments too.
Do we have Joanna? Hello, Joanna. I'm hoping we're going to get Joanna in a moment because this is a slot.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can indeed, Joanna. How are you?
Nothing like a little technological challenge at the start. Yeah, we're good. We're good. I'm better now.
when you think about the miracles that are being performed for you and I to have this conversation at all, isn't it amazing that we don't get more of these little tiny hitches?
It actually is amazing. And often it's as simple as the famous phrase of the moment, are you on mute? Could it be that? So, yeah.
Well, as always, Joanna, I'll be hanging on your every word in this slot. And I'm happy to say that many of these questions for you seem like ones that I could have asked you myself. So we better get stuck in. The first one is a listener wondering, are they being too strict over video games? They say, we don't let our twins who are aged 8 use devices or video games. My husband is completely against them. He works in IT, but prefers old school parenting, focusing on Lego and Meccano and outdoor activities. For years, I went along with it, but now they're 8. I really feel it's putting our kids, my boy in particular, at a disadvantage. In school, he sits with boys who play Nintendo Switch and Xbox. They talk Minecraft and Fortnite. My lad doesn't play these unless he gets to see them in their house. And I feel he's being excluded from conversations and could be coming across as an oddbot and an outsider. He likes to pretend he's playing video games and he uses Lego to build a video games console. Oh my word. I feel he seems a little bit more childish, naive than the other boys. And because he's not sporty, he's not bonding over sport either. He has friends, but not one special best friend. He loves TV, but only allowed to watch on the weekend mornings or in family movie nights. Again, my husband doesn't allow TV. Personally, I think these limits on media are a little too strict now that the kids are 8. I remember being that age and being the happiest when my mum would left me alone to watch TV. I feel his childhood is slipping away and he's not allowed to just be a kid and enjoy video games and TV. I am 45 and at his age, I would have already racked up more hours playing Pong with my brother than my son has playing any video game. I'm a little bit heartbroken and I would buy him a Nintendo Switch in a heartbeat. I don't mention my daughter because video games don't seem to be a thing with girls. It's all music and dance. She is fine. Is there such a thing as being too strict?
I mean, there's actually so many sub-questions within this question, but I'm going to start with that end one. Is there such a thing as being too strict? Because, look, boundaries and limit setting are really, really important for children, and not just very important for young children, but important right throughout parenting and childhood. It's just that sometimes we confuse boundaries and limit setting with rigidity. And actually, healthy, positive boundaries and limits are not rigid. They're flexible and they are adaptable to the evolving, changing needs of our children as they grow and develop. So is there such a thing as being too strict? I probably use the word rigid. And yes, there is such a thing as being too rigid or too limiting or too restricting. But it's not to say that boundaries and limits are the problem here. What's jumping out for me, Tom, as you're reading through that, is we've got two parents who are absolutely on different pages when it comes to this. You know, even at the beginning, this parent who's writing in is saying, you know, for years I went along with it. And that to me is a very passive way of entering into this. Look, I was never on board with this boundary, but, you know, I went along with it. But now I think it's a problem. So the main thing that needs to happen here is both parents need to sit down and be really open about, I think this is too strict. I think this is too rigid. And the other parents say, no, this is what I really believe. And in order to get on the same page, it's actually about compromise and getting onto a new page so that each of you is giving a bit. It might be appropriate now at 8 years old to say, look, he's really showing a keen interest in video games. Sometimes the idea of them is even more attractive than the reality of sitting playing them. He has 8 years of what sounds like very healthy developmental play, you know, lots of outdoor activities, imaginative creative play like Lego, limited screen access. You know, all of these are not bad things, so long as they're done in line with your child's growth and developmental needs. I'm hearing here that this parent is saying it's no longer meeting his needs and he needs a little bit more to engage with his social group. But that's the other piece of this letter that really interested me. Like, he's sitting with boys in school who talk about video gaming, but the school day is actually a very structured environment. You know, they're in school and they've got, you know, especially at 8, they've got curriculum stuff that goes on. It's really structured, task completion. There's a little bit of free time and that, and then they're outside in the yard playing. So I don't know how much of the school day is consumed with video game talk and how much of it is actually more imaginative play, physical play, running around and task completion. So don't get too swayed by everyone talks about this all of the time. I'm always left out, because let's look at exactly how much of a window in his day is available to talk about these things. And then talk about, you know, with him, what kind of things can he talk about? He could talk about Lego. He could talk about the things that interest him. So that not to say, well, look, you can't be interesting unless you play video games. Actually, he's got, I imagine, tons of things that he could talk about because he's doing tons of creative stuff. And that's wonderful. And he doesn't need to be sporty, but he is having outdoor activity time. So I think it's really about parental compromise, reestablishing the boundaries. Your children are coming out of that early childhood stage and now into middle childhood. It's actually an appropriate time to look at the rules, so to speak, and say, this was really great for them thus far. Now we need to re-examine and re-establish fresh boundaries that are developmentally matched to middle childhood. But I think this parent who has been going along with stuff really needs to step up and say, actually, here's where I want it to go.
Okay, because people often talk about the parents needing to be on the same page, but that does mean that the parents need to sit down beforehand and decide exactly what page they're both on, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. And it's not like one page is nicer than the other. It's actually about creating a new page together and writing that page and saying, you know, look, when I was a child, this was actually a really big part of my childhood and I feel it did me no harm. And actually, I drew some benefit from it. This is why I think it's important. And the other person say, well, look, I work in IT. I see the damage this does to kids. I've read the research. I don't want our kids exposed to it. Now they're middle childhood. Now it's a different phase. Let's both of you take a step in.
Okay. Listeners are saying, with the age we live in, it's almost cruel to not allow a child to have access to game consoles. What would you think about that?
No, I wouldn't use the word cruel, but I do think the ubiquitous nature of these, like they are everywhere, I do think it's very challenging as a parent to try and keep these devices out of your children's lives. To get them to 8 was an immense achievement, to be honest. Also, we have to put it in context. You know, it's not like video games are awful and they're going to derail their development. It is about boundaries and limits, about saying, yes, you can play age and developmentally appropriate games at set times that we set for you. You can play them this time. You know, just kind of saying it's going to be structured, but always remembering structure is flexible, not rigid.
Okay. Next question for you, Joanna, is a listener looking for help to encourage their 16-year-old. They say, my son is age 16 and he has returned to school and transition year. He's feeling the pressure of a day stuck indoors wearing a mask. And I see that he says that he has nothing to look forward to. He's down and angry come Monday morning. We've worked our way through big challenges as he has matured. And this one has that unknown quality about it for everyone. We've had a good relationship and I've made it clear that I'm here for him and acknowledge that it's not easy. I've encouraged him to look for positives, gratitude, and I'm glad he's in a group of good friends. These are strange times, however, and I really wonder, what else can I do?
Oh, goodness. Like, I just, at first when I read this, I was a little surprised, you know, that in transition year, he feels he has nothing to look forward to. And I kind of thought, well, gosh, you know, what's the transition year schedule or plan here? Because transition year is supposed to be that year that does offer fresh opportunities and new experiences and learn new skills and try out new things and is supposed to, you know, be structured in a more kind of practical doing way rather than traditional sit in a classroom academic structure. You know, it offers more flexibility. So I think if it was me, I would be talking to your transition, your coordinator, and getting the plan for the year and really seeing what's going to resonate with him. And if there is nothing there, which would surprise me, but if there is nothing there, do say, well, look, this and this really isn't going to suit him, but I really want him to get the most out of this year. I wonder, is there flexibility that if I was to source him a community role, a volunteering role, something that's more outdoors or active? I'm just reading that if he hates being indoors, I'm inferring maybe outdoors is better, and that you can work with the school around that and involve him. I think as parents and, you know, teachers, we have to be careful at this age that we're not saying, don't worry, son, I'm going to fix this for you. I'm going to, you know, design a new schedule that'll work for you. Make sure that he's not just telling you, I've nothing to do, this is rubbish, I'm unhappy, but actually saying, okay, I hear you. What changes need to happen to turn this around? Involve him actively in that. He's 16 years old, and it's really important that you bring his desire into this too. Yeah. And what does he see would work? And let him contribute and feedback to the coordinator. Look, the schedule isn't going to work for me, or the plan, and see what else he can integrate from his outside world into it. Because there are a lot of positives here, you know. Good group of friends, you've worked through challenges, you've a good relationship, he clearly talks to you, you're empathizing, you know, that things are not easy, and they really haven't been easy for anyone. But I really think this age group of teenager has had a particularly tough lockdown time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, so I think this parent's doing everything right. You know, you're doing acceptance and empathy, you get it, you're reflecting. Now it's about taking all of that forward into an action plan that I'd like to see him an active part of.
Okay. 53106 for your texts on that. It's Tom Dunn with you, Joanna Fortune in our parenting slot. And if you have questions, you can email them to newstalk@afternoon.com or text them in now to 53106. This next one is an unusual one for you, Joanna. 4-year-old plays with nappies. We have a 4-year-old son, he's going to be 5 in November, who is obsessed with playing with nappies. It started about 18 months ago when his young cousin, nappy age, came to visit. Our son is fully toilet trained and hasn't needed nappies at day or night in a very long time. When we go out to shop, though, he'll pick up a pack of pull-ups in lieu of a toy. When we get home, he'll put one on just to wear it around the house. He never uses them to go to the toilet. He'll also encourage his friends to put on nappy for fun. If we visit a friend's house with nappy age kids, the first thing he'll ask to do is see their nappy collection. He will also beg to take some home. We're expecting our second child in November, so there'll be an abundance of nappies in the house soon enough. At the moment, I'm going with the flow, and I hope you grow out of this, as it doesn't bother me too much, and there are worse things a 4-year-old could come up with. My husband isn't quite on board. Sees these as the silly. He doesn't want his teacher or his child minder to see him in nappies, so he does have some sense around that. What should we do?
This is definitely one of the quirkier nappy type questions we get in. And, you know, I think, you know, when your husband says it's silly, I'm not on board with it. I mean, if you can't be silly at 4 years old, when can you be silly? I think it's the right of a 4-year old to be as silly as they possibly can be for as long as they possibly can be silly. Now, that being said, this is definitely interesting. At that age, though, of, you know, coming out of that stage one play of discovering everything has an inside and an outside, including yourself. So that would be like 0 to infancy, right up to 3.5, even 4 years old, to be honest. It's, you know, when they love the box the toy came in rather than the toy that was in it, because a box, you put things in and out and you climb in and out and you fill it up and empty it out. And it's all about containment. And it's not unusual to see children around this age develop a fascination with things that open and close, okay, locks that turn. And it's all of that kind of in, out, this way, that way. And there's a rhythm to it. So on the surface, like a nappy, isn't that the perfect thing that you have the sticky tabs and you put it on and take it off and put it on and take it off? So there's a little bit of that to me, I'm like, yeah, I get it. And also they're squishy, they're soft. Some of them have some kind of a, we might call it a baby scent, but that kind of a scent to it, you know, so there is a sensory aspect to it as well. And it's also quite a bit of creativity around role trying out. He's not quite at the developmental age for full blown role play, but there is a little bit of, when I was a baby and you're a baby and look at what you have and I don't have, and gosh, I'm going to be getting a baby in the house. So thematically, it kind of makes sense. And if it's done as it seems to be in this letter, like dress up and a role play, I think it's okay. If he ever wanted to wear it, you know, for the full day, or began to soil in it, then no. then it's something else. I think when friends come over and he wants them to try on the nappies too, you want to talk to him a bit about the consent piece and say, you can invite them to do that, but if they don't want to do it, why don't you just put them on the teddies or the dolls while your friends are here instead? So you're not saying don't play with the nappies, but you are saying, look, not everybody will want to do this. And you might not want all his friends stripping off in your house while they're over for a little play date. So again, that's about boundaries. I'm just saying you might. You know, they're only small little kids, so I don't want to infer anything sinister from that. But because there's body curiosity, but you might decide, let's everyone keep their clothes on while we have friends over. And in which case, just reframe it and redirect it to the teddies. If you haven't, I would definitely buy him a doll. And you know, one of those dolls that are quite fancy, you know, that they come with nappies. You might even be able to give them a bottle and then they wet themselves. You can get little packets of doll nappies. They come in little packs of five. And, you know, obviously they're quote unquote disposable nappies, but you can reuse them, you know, make a lot of use out of them. I would really invest in something like that for him so that he can really play this out as much as he likes. And particularly because you've a baby coming, that he could be mirroring what you're doing with the baby. So he doesn't have to be the baby, but he can play out that interaction. Talk to him about when he did wear nappies when he was younger and he was a baby, and, you know, make that fun and exciting. But otherwise, I wouldn't psychopathologize this. I'd be looking at this as, you know, imaginative exploratory play.
Yeah.
Maybe top up a bit of sensory stuff with him, but it's about some boundaries and limits again around it.
Very good. Right, we have a quick break to get out of the way. We'll have more of your questions after this. You're very welcome back. It's Tom Dunn standing in for Sean today on News Talk 106 to 108. Joanna Fortune, parenting expert, is still with us answering your queries. And Joanna, I have a few texts for you. A lot of love for the little nappy guy. I love that he calls those his nappy collections. Many of us have a bag or a shoe collection. He has a little nappy collection that is so cute. I wonder, does he rate the nappies? Pampers like Gucci. I wonder indeed. And on the transition year student, a listener is saying transition year this year is going to be a very different year for students. Very few workplaces want to take students on for work experience. Lots of tourism trips have been cancelled. Please don't put extra pressure on the transition year coordinator. The student needs to adapt and make the most of being back in, which is fair enough. And on the video games, here's an interesting one for you. In my time, my 13-year-old son wanted an Atari Pac-Man against his father's determined wishes. In the end, I went out and I got it for him. Got the silent treatment for 3 weeks, but I killed many birds with that one stone. She will too, says Anne. You're not going to respond to that, Joanna. I thought you were going to either say you were on the father's side or Anne had gone too far.
No, Tom, I know better than to take people's sides on these things. I think that, you know,
you're so wily.
I'm going to play that middle ground there. I think that, you know, if you can come up with creative solutions that you can both tolerate and accept, then you're winning. You know, you're winning. And always keep an open mind that you can introduce a game to a child and say, you know, we're going to give you access to this game for this period of time, and then we're going to see how it works out. That I'm not saying you can have it indefinitely, but we're going to try it. Encourage that idea of trying things. You can do that too. It's about flexible boundaries.
Okay. Next one for you is, we have a 9-year-old girl at home, not very sporty, but willing to give stuff a go. She's a good-natured child, lots of friends, and doesn't take things too seriously. Problem is, she's not good at sticking with things. She goes to camogie, but only because her friends are there, never practices or shows enthusiasm for it. She played soccer for a while, but she dropped out. She tried martial arts, which we thought might suit her, but again, dropped out after a few weeks. I know that all kids aren't sporty and have no problem with that, but still trying to encourage some sort of sport for the physical benefits to improve concentration levels, which can be so poor. She would happily sit in front of a TV all day if allowed. There is a new gymnastics class about to start locally, and she's always expressed an interest in going. I'm happy to let her go and try it. She's very tall and fairly clumsy, so I think it could help in that regard. My partner, however, is afraid that she will go and find out that she isn't the best at it and wants to drop out again, and that it might dent her confidence, which we don't want either. So what should we do for the best? Ideally, we'd love to have her in a swimming club, but there are no classes going on at the moment.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I was going through this and going, yeah, okay, so this is a little girl that probably needs some help, you know, finding her passion and what she's interested. Some kids just, you know, run with that, and some kids do need a bit of structuring and help with it. But then it was this piece towards the end that really jumped out at me, you know, that your partner is afraid she's going to go and find out she isn't the best at it and want to drop out. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. Is it that you know, I like doing these things, but I'm only going to stick with it if I excel at it, if I'm the best in the group. Because then you're looking at really encouraging effort over outcome, that it's really about investing in trying these things. And you only give her feedback on her effort. You know, it's not that you know, she's really good at something and you ignore it, but you don't go, oh, you know, that was a great score. Or that was a great, you got X amount of goals, or you won or you lost. It's not that. It's about you were really paying attention to the others on your team. I could see you were watching for who was alongside you. They were great passes. I thought you communicated really well. You know, you focus specifically your praise on the effort. And I think that's something, because actually we know from a lot of research out there, and particularly the Stanford studies, that for, you know, for praise to actually positively impact self-esteem and confidence in a meaningful way, it has to be specific, not general. You want to really say what you're praising for. So it's not, aren't you great? It's, this was specifically great that you did. And that children go with that, because if they feel the only way to please us as parents, or the only way to enjoy something, is to be perfect at it, that's an impossible goal. That's an impossible pressure. And it will steal the fun out of things. So that, I just pay attention to that, those parents, you know, that if you think it's because she's not brilliant at it, or she mightn't immediately be the best, you do want to tell her as well that lots of people start things and it takes sticking with it to get really good at it and to develop our skills in it. But for now, I would say to her, look, you're going to be doing some extracurricular activity or some hobby. There's going to be something. So you're not asking, would you like to do something? Because actually hobbies are good for kids. Give her a choice of three. As parents, be absolutely happy with all of those three. Don't put something in there and hope with your fingers crossed behind your back that she doesn't pick that one. Don't put it in there if it's not something affordable or something you can physically manage bringing her to. Give her a choice of three. I would probably put one sport, one non-sport in that three, and tell her that whatever she chooses, she must complete the full term, no matter what. She doesn't have to love it. She doesn't have to be great at it. But if you sign her up, she has to see out the term. The only change I'd make on that is if it was causing her, you know, stress or distress, or there was something very particular going on, don't say, look, you got to see out the 10 weeks. But if it's just, yeah, I'm not that into it after all, no, not good enough. You got to stick with it. You got to see it out. You don't have to sign up to a second term, but you do need to see out this term, because it's just going to help her to see that when you commit to something, you got to stick with it and see it out. And just because you don't love it after 3 weeks, doesn't mean you won't grow to really enjoy it in a different way. The social aspect, the structure of it, the predictability, the fun, it could be so many benefits in it. Also, though, for your own sake and your own financial sake as well, if you're signing her up to something, maybe inquire if there is an option of a trial class that you certainly pay for, but you don't have to commit to 10 or 12 weeks until she's done the trial class. Some places do that, not all, but I think that might be an option with her. Okay. Definitely, though, you want to encourage her to be picking the thing, and then that she can't say, I want this new thing, this new thing, this new thing. Just pick the one for now and stick with one.
Excellent. Finally, Joanne, listener asks, how do you talk to a six-year-old about the death of a pet? Is it possible to ask Joanne to speak generally about handling the death of a pet with your kids? Our daughter is six, almost seven, and we've just heard that my family dog, as in her grandparents' dog, is about to be put down. She's very attached to the dog and will be very upset. I'm looking for some tips now to handle this, as I believe it could be a good foundation for handling grief in the future.
Well, you're absolutely right. Actually, losing and dealing with the loss of a pet is a really good way to introduce the theme, you know, and get children ready for it. And at her age, you know, we've spoken before about this concept of death. You know, we get lots of letters about seemingly morbid five-year-olds, but actually 4 to 6-year-olds become quite fascinated with the theme or concept of death developmentally. But at her age, you know, she's six, almost seven, and between 6 and 9, they really do get a clearer understanding of death. There's more of an increase on the physical, biological aspect, so they can ask some pretty gory details. Don't worry about that. That's just how their interest goes. But they still have an element of magical thinking. So you might hear things like, I'm going to pray really hard, or I'm going to write to Santa, or I'm going to wish that the doggy survives. So you want to talk about it very open, honest, and in very clear language. You know, if you know the dog is not going to survive, that you're going to say that, you know, we've had so much fun with this dog and let's share some memories, and the dog is sick and the vet has had a really good look and tried a few things, but, you know, he's not going to get better. We don't want him to have any pain. We want him to feel at peace. So the dog is going to be leaving us. The dog is going to be dying. And when the dog dies, it means that he's gone and he won't be coming back. We won't get to see him again. So that you want to be very clear about the finality of it and use the word death and dying. And if they're like, what does that mean? Where do you go when you die? That's completely up to you within your own belief framework, what you say about that. If you want to locate the dog in doggy heaven, or if you say, no, look, at that's it. When something dies, their heart doesn't beat and they don't breathe anymore and that's it. But then, because you have some time here, try to think of some lovely goodbye rituals, having some time with the dog, saying goodbye, building a memory board, and having some nice little ceremony around this as well. Because the goodbye, you have an opportunity. This isn't going to happen abruptly. You have an opportunity to have a closure to it that I think could be good. But overall, deal with it directly with open, honest, unambiguous language.
Okay, sounds lovely, Joanna. I like the idea of the memory board in particular. Joanna, thank you very much indeed for that.
Oh, thank you.
Joanna, lovely talking to you as always. And you can listen back to the Parenting Slot on the News Talk app. We'll have loads more for you after this.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With the Dacia range. Drive away today with no payments for the first 3 months.
Hey, scientists, how critical is pure water to you? In this new podcast, Lab Water Stories Unfiltered, we at Millipore Sigma look closer at this often overlooked lab essential. Tune in as experts drop tips and insights not found in textbooks, taken from their work with MilliQ Lab Water Solutions. Lab Water Stories Unfiltered. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Millipore Sigma is the U.S. and Canada life science business of Merck KGaA Darmstadt, Germany.